You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Welcome to OneOfUs.net's premier video game podcast, We Are Error. John, we're going to talk about dinosaurs today. Excuse me. Dinosaurs.
So you're just going to introduce me then?
I don't even now you introduce me. Now you introduce me.
Well, Chris. Christopher J. Herman.
Yeah, there you go.
We are. Mm-hmm. Was that a Jurassic Park reference?
Yeah, oh my god, it's one of the most iconic moments in Jurassic Park with Ian Malcolm played by the great, the very handsome Jeff Goldblum.
He's one of those guys who just gets better with age, really.
Yeah, even as a young man, he was still really good. When he was splayed out, you know, that oiled chest and everything like that.
I don't think I've actually seen Jurassic Park all the way through, but we're going to move on with that.
What?
I'm not sure.
Oh, my God.
It's one of those things, like, I can't remember if this was on mic or off, where I hadn't seen Empire Strikes Back until maybe 2 years ago, I think. Because right when it starts, I'm just spouting off every line as if I've watched it every day. Yeah. And I can't tell if that's because pop culture has ingrained in me every single line, or because I did watch it and I just didn't remember.
No, it's just, Empire is just so much a part of pop culture. And the same with Jurassic Park. I mean, there's so many iconic lines. All right, get ready to hold on to your butts, as Samuel Jackson says, or, you know, shoot, ha! Which is one of my favorite lines in the beginning of the movie.
Is this the same movie where the fat guy has whipped cream, right?
Newman. You mean Newman?
The guy. Yeah, is he Seinfeld?
Same. He's playing the same character, pretty much. I mean, he's an asshole. In my mind, is the prequel to Jurassic Park for Newman. He eventually, he was a mailman, then he eventually becomes a DNA or a computer hacker.
Sort of hacker.
Yeah. And years later,
barbell, right? Barbell shaving cream.
It is barbell.
And then
the little
wing tipped lioness mane. Small little raptor spits acid in his face.
A dinosaur.
No one actually knows if he dies.
No, right? He totally dies. I mean, well, it spits the venom in his face, and that's to blind him, right? And so he makes his way back to the car, and he gets in the car, and the thing somehow is able to. Well, as we learned, velociraptors can open doors, so this thing clearly can open doors too. And the car's rocking back and forth, and you imagine one of two things happen: it's eating him alive, which is horrible, or it's fucking him. You know, I think it's eating him. You know, I don't think the dinosaurs are fucking humans in that movie. Although, one of the big rumors was for Jurassic Park 4, it was going to involve human-dinosaur hybrids. So that could eventually happen.
Was fucking
maybe that's the origin. We're going to go all the way back. Yeah. Steven Spielberg, what a genius.
Yeah, welcome to We Are Air, OneOfUs.net's premier dinosaur talking podcast.
Oh, man. We're going to talk a lot about dinosaurs. But before we talk about dinosaurs, we got to talk about the news. And boy, oh boy, man, God, oh God. A lot of good news stories this week. Started with one of the biggest ones is that Warner Bros. Has officially announced Middle-Earth Shadow of War, the sequel to 2014 Shadow of Mordor. It will be released on August 22nd in North America and August 25th in Europe. Following a retailer leak, the publisher has officially announced the game for PS4, Xbox One, including Project Scorpio, Steam, and Windows 10 will be an Xbox Play Anywhere title. Developed by Monolith Productions, creators of Shadow of Mordor, the game will once again feature an original story in the Middle-Earth universe, and will see the return of Talion and his ghostly companion, Celebrimbor. Didn't think I could say that, but I did.
You did a good job.
Mm-hmm. So far, I haven't started once. Players will wield a new ring of power and confront the deadliest of enemies, including Sauron and his Nazgul, in a monumental battle for Middle-Earth. The game will also feature an expanded version of the Nemesis system. In Shadow of Mordor, the game dynamically created orcish officers that reacted to their encounters of Talion. In Shadow of War, Warner Bros. Promised that the world's environments itself will also be shaped by your play, as well as new kind of reactive NPC followers. Followers bring about entirely new stories of loyalty, betrayal, and revenge, said the official Shadow of War press release. The Nemesis system is also expanded to create a unique personal world through Nemesis Fortresses, which allows players to utilize different strategies to conquer dynamic strongholds and create personalized worlds with their unique orc army. I played Shadow of Mordor, and I really liked it, even though it was aping every other game that has come out in the last 5 years. It felt like a mix between Assassin's Creed and the Arkham series, the Batman Arkham mm-hmm. games. But then it had like that the aesthetic of Lord of the Rings. It's like, okay, this is fine. Like to me, it was like a solid 8, like a really interesting, like a really, you know,
8 is great.
It is a great game. It's, you know, it was a great experience to the point where, you know, I perfected the game. I enjoyed my time with it. But the thing that stood out about it was the Nemesis system, the idea that you can have these kind of rivals in the game, these orc, you know, as they say, officers that you can either kill or, you know, or send other people to assassinate or take control. And then you kind of rule their forces and yeah, you use them in your battle against Sauron and the armies of Mordor. And I really like that. That was my favorite part about the game. And through, you know, this big reveal, I like the fact that they're doubling down on that, that they're expanding it. You know, the story itself, it's not really all that interesting. The first game was just a story of revenge. You know, Talion, his family was killed by bad guys. And he himself is killed, but he gets possessed by this wraith, Celebrimbor, who, as we learn in the first game, was the forger of the Ring of Power that Sauron uses, you know, attempted to use to take over Middle-earth. But yeah, so I'm just really interested to play the game just for its gameplay and hopefully for a much larger world. Because I felt the open world in Shadow of Mordor was a little kind of too contained for me. So I'm hopeful that they'll expand on the gameplay elements and also kind of the map.
Wait, so is this Ring of Power, is that the ring from Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
Oh, which I have also never seen. So.
Oh my God, you never read the books either, I assume, huh? Oh, I don't read.
They have small words.
Well, they have big words in it. Yeah, they have big words. They got a lot of made-up words, big too. Words, but a lot tiny of elvish.
Font. Very tiny font.
A lot of orcish. A lot of
words on one page, man.
That is true. There's a lot of pages of Tolkien, you know, describing what a tree branch looks like, in case you forgot. You know, yeah, 1.5 pages of him describing a tree.
Describing wood.
Yeah, describing wood. Oh, man. He loves wood.
You know, maybe he'd be really good at, you know, writing erotic fiction.
He would be very
that good at describing wood. I mean,
he would have been.
He could change the game.
He could have. Oh, yeah, very, very true. Very true.
But I do think it's interesting that it's coming out so soon, or at least it feels so soon.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they didn't plan on revealing it yet.
No, it was revealed by Walmart. Target. Yeah, which I think is kind of sad because I imagine this was going to be revealed probably like at E3 and they would have said, comes out this summer. It's like, oh, wow, how fast that we had an idea that this game was in production because Monolith was, they haven't announced any games whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, they're clearly working on a sequel because the last game was a commercial success, along with being, for the most part, a critical
isn't
success.
Isn't GDC also happening pretty soon here? It could have been revealed there.
True. Yep.
Maybe a week ahead. But like even then, that's like, it was probably set for one of those big conferences because
yeah.
I do remember, although I didn't get a chance to really get too much time with it, Shadow of Mordor really did like make a big splash, at least with the Nemesis system.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised not many other games have taken advantage of that kind of
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
I will say two other things. Shadow of War is a bad title. Just nothing about it really stands out.
I mean, Shadow of Mordor, it's like, oh, it's the Shadow of Mordor. It's Mordor's shadow.
Yeah,
it's the evil,
I mean, like,
the impending evil.
You understand
yeah,
that.
Middle-earth, Lord of the Rings. It's usually connected to
but,
that.
So then just Shadow of War is just kind of like, okay.
I imagine because
anything else.
Because I'm going to constantly call it Shadow of Mordor, too, you know, or whatever, because I just, you know, I'm gonna make that mistake many times eventually when we probably play and review the game. But, yeah, not a particularly great title. Though I am hoping that when they mean by war, that you'll actually get into larger scale conflict.
I assume that's
I think the game is bigger. I think that's what they want to emphasize.
I assume that's what followers are too. Maybe building your own little armies.
Yeah.
Or
fortresses, as they say, should be able to control kind of points on the map.
But also cool. No Switch support. Nintendo off to a good start.
Yeah. I mean, we knew that. I wasn't surprised by that at all. They're not going to... Most of the games that are coming out on the Xbox One, the PS4, are not going to be coming out.
Then how does the Switch survive?
It's just the Nintendo.
It just does it.
Well, no, I imagine. Well, like I said, it's just going to appeal to the Nintendo audience.
So
you know? I heard Zelda's great. I've heard that.
No, I've heard it's one of the best games in recent.
But
memory.
That's not. It's what going to say this is.
I'm not going to pay $300 to buy it. To play
more
it.
Than that, $360. Okay. You got to pay for the the game as well.
Hey, maybe my, you know, to get the optimal experience, I got to buy that pro controller. So $410, huh?
Yeah.
Just throw that on there.
Sounds
also,
good.
Also, I did math wrong. 420.
There you go.
The weed number.
420. speaking of games you probably won't play, Ubisoft has announced that the Division developer Massive Entertainment is currently working on a game based in the world of James Cameron's Avatar. Massive is working alongside Fox Interactive and James Cameron's studio Lightstorm Entertainment, and the game will be built in the Snowdrop engine that powered The Division. Ubisoft said the game will be headed to PC and consoles, but didn't name any specific platforms yet. No plot details were revealed, but Ubisoft said in a statement that the game will continue to expand and deepen in the Avatar universe in exciting and innovative ways along with the films.
Woo.
With the power of Massive Snowdrop game engine and the team's passion of, and obsessive focus on detail, we know they're the right group to bring the beauty and danger of Pandora to life, Cameron said in a video accompanying the announcement. No release date has been announced yet, nor has any specific title or any details about gameplay. There was an Avatar game that came out a few years ago, like a runaround with the movie, right? It was for the PS3 and the Xbox 360. It acted as a prequel title, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know
that. Nobody played it, and I think it reviewed rather poorly. It didn't look that good either. But man, they're trying to make Avatar a thing.
Didn't we just recently talk about this on our breakfast pub?
I think one of our breakfast pubs,
breakfast
yeah.
took over, and I was just like, does anyone give a shit about Avatar? Like, actually, I understand. I completely understand it is the highest grossing movie of all time.
Sure.
But it is the most uninteresting movie of all time.
It did not penetrate pop culture whatsoever. It's like, you don't see anyone dressing up as blue cat people at Comic-Con or anything like
or
that.
Like,
or making references in the movie. Like, I mean, there's no lines.
You
in the
do
movie.
See people well, fucking horses, though. So
you do see that.
You know.
The only I think, thing that from Avatar that people still quote is unobtainium. You know, because it's so stupid. It's an unobtainable mineral. We're going to call it unobtainium.
You know,
like,
yeah, like,
really?
even that, though, I forget it comes from Avatar because I always think you're making an X-Men reference when someone says unobtainium. Just because I think, like, that's probably
like animantium.
That's probably some weird Marvel metal that, like, powers Captain America's shield. It sounds more like that.
Well, it's
adamantium.
It's vibranium.
Vibranium.
See,
it's
like,
vibranium.
But then he got,
cooler.
Then
even
he got an adamantium
cooler.
Shield. Yeah, true. Yeah, I don't even, I don't. Really care.
Are these movies... Is he really going to make more movies?
Yeah, he says he's working on it right now.
Actually.
Yeah. Four. He's going to make four.
Four extras or four total? Like, is
four
there
films. They're going to be four... Well, it's going to be five in total because the first one, but there's going to be... He's going to do four films back to back to back, which that's what he says. He changed his mind, like, I don't know,
is
all the time.
Is he really that interested in this world?
He loves this shit. He loves this, you know, this shit. He just wants to keep... I imagine, well, I think the second one's going to go underwater, which he loves. He loves the water, as we know. Spent 10 years in it, you know, after making Titanic. But I just have no interest in it. I mean, I'm sure, you know, even the developer, who was it again?
Massive Entertainment.
I played the Division beta. I didn't play it through the entire game. I was not impressed with that game at all. I felt that it was, just the world itself is very uninteresting. I thought the gameplay was rather stiff. You know, I expect from my third-person shooters, like, you know, a little fluidity or that, you know, it has, like, that nice chunkiness that Gears of War has. And it had really had none of it. You know, there was no, like, weight to it. And, I don't know, it didn't work for me. And it wasn't that pretty to begin with. Like, I remember when they showed the footage of that game years ago at whatever E3, and it's like, oh, this looks beautiful. But then I got the game, or I played the beta. I'm like, ew, it doesn't look good at all. I'm not sure what people are, you know, we're so excited about.
I was so interested in that game. In a game,
a lot of people were.
Like, I saw a couple of videos. I was like, that seems like my jam. Like, techno war going on, like, massive scale. That sounds so cool. Mm-hmm. Never touched it.
Yeah.
I do that a lot with Tom Clancy stuff recently. Just, like, something about his name still on it is just, maybe that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he's dead, and he has nothing to do with
maybe
it.
Maybe so disinterested anymore. In Tom Clancy stuff. Because Siege is another thing, right? Every time I see it, it's like $20 and I really want to play it. And I think that's because what first got me into online gaming was Rainbow Six Vegas.
Oh, really? That
Vegas was the shit.
Mine was Rainbow Six 3 for the original Xbox.
So they were both Rainbow Six games that got us into...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I already played multi. I mean, by that point, I was playing Halo multiplayer. But that was the one Rainbow Six game that I started like, oh, this is... This
well,
is
I mean
great.
Like live.
Sure. Yeah. For multiplayer stuff.
Wait, you could play Halo 1 live? Or you mean two?
Two.
Oh, okay.
Two.
I don't like Halo very much.
Yeah, I know. But, we shall see about that. I'm not expecting too much.
Do you think it'll be on the Switch? Is the more important
no,
question.
No, not at all.
God.
Minecraft has now sold over 122 million copies, with over 55 million people still playing. The figures, which came courtesy of a tweet from the official Minecraft Twitter account, are from the 106 million copies of Minecraft sold as of last year, placing it among the best-selling games of all time. During Nintendo Big Switch reveal event in January, a new version of Minecraft was shown for Switch. Microsoft bought Minecraft developer Mojang for $2.5 billion in 2014, but as the games continued to roll out, pretty much it's pretty much on every platform, and that didn't stop the franchise from appearing on current platforms as well, the Xbox One and the PS4. And Minecraft recently received a major update on Windows 10 and mobile late last year. Minecraft continues to be just a beast of a downloadable game.
You know, although it's a game I don't play, I do have to congratulate.
It's the opposite of condemn.
Congratulate Mojang and Notch and, you know, those people who, like, helped really build this thing into what it is. It's so simple, yet it really tapped into something. And I think, you know, you can complain all you want about it started this kind of casuals rise, and it's really just a baby game for babies. It's not a real game. Or, and it, like, helped with the rise of certain YouTubers, in a sense.
Totally did.
But I think it's one of those games where it's full of so much potential, and it's really like a Little Big Planet or Terraria or even something like that, where I've seen people make some magical experiences in this game. I've never been interested in myself, but I think it really helps people spark their imagination, and that, I think that's a really good thing for kids to do.
Yeah,
is to really learn how to build and create and
Be creative. Yeah,
and this game doesn't have any sort of themes in it that I think would restrict a player base.
Mm-hmm.
So it is one of the few games I think where I could hand it to a child, like a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
And not worry that something's going to freak them out necessarily. Mm-hmm. And just watch them kind of just click away. And I don't know. It's just one of those games where it really kind of turns everyone into a gamer, mm-hmm, to an extent. So
yeah. No, I absolutely agree. And yeah, I'll echo what you say. Yeah, congratulations to Mojang, because they created a hell of a game. Marvel Games won't force the developers it partners with to squeeze their games into existing storylines throughout Marvel's universes. Speaking to IGN at DICE 2017, Marvel Games creative director Bill Roseman instead assured that the teams behind games like Spider-Man for PS4 or Guardians of the Galaxy, the Telltale series, are being given the opportunity to create new visions of beloved characters. "We want to give developers freedom to tell their story. We want to make it an original story," Roseman said. "We want to give our partners freedom to look at all of Marvel history and to pick from what interests them. It's a bit like we're saying, hey, you're the chef. You're going to make this meal. Here's all the ingredients. You can pick the ingredients that you like and make a new meal." Those new meals include 4 announced console and PC projects, like I just said, Spider-Man for PS4, Guardians of the Galaxy, the Telltale series, but also Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite and the Avengers project from Square Enix. I mean, that's great to hear. I like the fact that clearly Disney understands that they need to have that same kind of success, that they saw that similar success that, like, Warner Brothers had with the Arkham games. Like, they want something of that quality. And they don't want to repeat the mistakes of what Activision did to, like, the Marvel franchise, like all those terrible Spider-Man games or those kind of movie tie-ins that just didn't work whatsoever, just awful. And so here they're like, here's the keys to the castle, here's everything at your disposal, go for it, create your vision. I think that's great.
Hold on, well, all those terrible Spider-Man games, believe it's like a 50-50 ratio.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all. It's more like I'd say it's like a 10-90, if that.
What? Okay, yeah. Spider-Man 2 is good.
Spider-Man 2 is, it was good for its time, but that game has not aged well at all.
Spider-Man.
My balloon!
Spider-Man 3 is fun to swing around
in. No, it's not.
That
game is shit.
I mean, it's a bad game.
Yeah, it is.
But it's fun to swing around in. Why do I keep...
Swing around.
Damn. Ultimate
becoming me.
Ultimate Spider-Man is really good. Spider-Man Web of Shadows, also really good.
Which one was that?
The one with Wolverine and Venom.
Oh, is that when Wolverine becomes Venom in that?
No, I don't think so. Does. Is it?
Yeah, he gets the symbiote attached to him.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's really fun. It's a really fun game. I think Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions is a very unique concept.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it would have been built into the sort of Spider-Man Web of Shadows framework, but I think the concept is really good. Edge of Time is not good. in a shattered dimensions, yeah. but cut in half.
And then there's
really weird.
All the other Spider-Man games throughout the decades.
Spider-Man PS1 held a special place in my heart.
That game holds a special place in my heart because, yeah, it was one of my original PS1 games I still have. What was it? Oh, yeah, well, you want a big fan of Maximum Carnage as well?
That's too old. That's before my time, my man.
NES or SNES title. So yeah.
I bet eventually we'll do a all Spider-Man episode. When Homecoming comes out, we'll do a Spider-Man episode.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, that'd be fun. Spider-Man episode. But the grand majority of Marvel games, like there's a few exceptions, like Deadpool, to me is a great Marvel game. And got totally underserved.
But yeah, in recent memory, you're right. Marvel hasn't had Injustice. Despite the gameplay part of Telltale's Batman being kind of ick, I really loved what they got to do with the story.
Yeah, it was different.
And the Arkham games are a game changer. So, I don't know. I think you're right about Marvel seeing the success that Warner Brothers has had in the game sphere. And they're like, well, we want to beat their ass in that too.
Mm-hmm. And they could definitely do that. Or at least rival them. Maybe not. I don't want to say beat their ass. That's weird words now, John. What? But,
that Spider-Man game looked good.
But I think that they definitely want that same success. So, yeah, well, we shall see. We shall see. The Metal Gear Solid movie is still happening. Director Jordan Vogt Roberts told Collider that Metal Gear Solid is probably the most important franchise to me on the planet. He praised Hideo Kojima's creation, saying it's a genius, idiosyncratic work. He went on to say that he recently has been meeting with Kojima himself, and that's been like a dream. And for how the Metal Gear Solid movie is actually coming along, he said the script is being worked on right now. This is a property that I will fight tooth and nail to make sure is done properly because it's so easy to screw up and so easy for a studio to try and make it into G.I. Joe or try and make it into Mission Impossible or try to make it into something that it's not, he said. Metal Gear Solid needs to be exactly what it needs to be, which is Metal Gear Solid. Volt Roberts added that Metal Gear Solid is somewhat unique in that unlike a comic book that has had dozens of writers over the years, Metal Gear Solid has had essentially one voice referring to Kojima. I think it'd be a massive film. I think it'd be an incredible film. But it needs to be done in a way that completely honors what Metal Gear is because it's a classic and it's a seminal work, not just in video games, but in media. He explained. He went on to say that there are hyper-violent parts of Metal Gear, but I would not necessarily call the hyper-violent part the core element of it versus like the tone and the voice and the philosophies that the characters exhibit. Those characters sort of are these walking philosophies. So I think nailing that part is far more important necessarily than thinking about the rating at this point. Because right now we're just trying to get the best version of it. Because he's talking about specifically about the film being a rated R instead of or possibly PG-13. The Metal Gear movie has now been in various stages of the development for more than a decade, as the film was officially confirmed at E3 2006, so over 10 years ago at this point. Of course, Volt Roberts is the director of Con Skull Island, when that will premiere on March 10th, 2017.
Which we'll be seeing on Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It looks good.
Yeah. I mean, I like the fact the guy is so passionate about it, but I don't think this movie's happening at all. You know, I think that's for the grand majority of many movie-based games. And there's no way this thing would... I don't think it could be PG-13. Metal Gear Solid, I think, should be rated R. It's a very violent series.
Is it?
I think so, yeah.
I don't even think it is. I get the core gameplay is killing, but it never feels like killing is the objective, necessarily. It's... I don't know, it... It just doesn't seem very violent. It seems more... What is Metal Gear?
I mean, that's a good question. It is very... it has many different tones. And that's the other thing. I just don't think you can make a movie because it's too out there. It's too weird. How do you make that for a mainstream audience? You can't.
That's my main point, is he keeps talking about he wants to capture the tone of the characters and their philosophies, and it's like, that doesn't fit in 2 hours. Like, Kojima's scripts, I assume, for each Metal Gear game.
Hundreds of pages.
And the games alone tend to be, 10-hour experiences, 20-hour experiences. Yeah. And I don't... Which of the six games? Five games?
I mean, there's spinoffs, too.
Would even be the one you choose?
I mean, I would probably start with the first game. You introduce them to this world. I would do Solid Snake first. It's because it's just a mission. You're at what the fuck? Outer Fox
Gold Gray. Gray Fox.
No. The
outer, base outer heaven.
Outer heaven. So you go there, and it's that kind of mission. You introduce all these crazy, weird mercenary people. And that's how you introduce people to this world where it's like, I'm fighting a telekinetic guy that can read my mind in every move. How do I defeat him? And you do it like that. You structure the movie around these boss battles, essentially, you know, and then you have this larger thing like, you know, what is war? What does it do to individuals? You know, what does it do to soldiers? Which I think is what Metal Gear Solid is at its core. You know, it's a critique on warfare and how it affects the individuals who participate in it. So you go from that approach. I would totally scrap Metal Gear Solid too. I would significantly change that film, you know, Jack sucks, right? Raiden, Ryden, whatever you want to call him, like get rid of him. No one cares about him. Metal Gear Solid 3 would be very easy.
That's what I was going to say. I actually think
you three, do 3 first.
I think 3 is the one to go because it's just a Cold War film.
Yeah,
it's a Cold War film in the woods. You know, the best part about that game is the unique boss battles and the way to go about that. Mm. But I think you just don't have the time to spend 2 hours while he hides from the end. Like, that's not going to be an exciting fight. And the sorrow part is just so weird.
Sorrow.
Like, you couldn't really fit that in. But if you focus more on...
No vampires.
Is that in the first one? Third one? That's in the second one.
It's second and third.
Oh, okay.
He's introduced... Well, his younger version is...
Okay, in three.
Ghost vampire.
I think if you make the third movie with just a focus on defeating Big Boss...
Yeah.
With Revolver, just play up Revolver Ocelot little bit.
Oh, I wouldn't do Big Boss. I would do Liquid Snake.
If you're doing 3?
Oh, you're doing 3?
Okay, yeah, I'm saying mind. If you're doing 3, it's if you structure 3.
You're fighting the boss.
Yeah,
you're
I'm saying 3 is more about this injured warrior.
Which is Big Boss, yeah.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Who's?
Boss, just the boss.
Boss, okay. Yeah. You do... Your big boss, just call him Snake.
Yeah.
Because it's naked Snake. But just like, just say Snake, whatever, people will get it.
Mm-hmm.
You're just an injured guy in the woods,
mm-hmm.
Cold War era. Have just boss be the main person with Revolver, just play up his role a little bit. Because it's so easy to stylize.
One of the greatest rivalries in all video games.
And like, so, that'd be a cool hint at something in the future to set up.
Yeah, sure.
And also her sidekick, the guy with the electric punch hands. He could just look like the big bad general.
Colonel...
Vulcan,
yeah,
Vulcan, something like that.
Vulcan,
like,
I think him. That's it.
He can be portrayed as your main antagonist throughout the entire movie, but then it's revealed that your actual mentor is the one, and that just seems like an easier kind of play.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to strip out all the weird elements, the Kojima elements, the elements that make it Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, then you're back,
Then you're just back at making a war movie. So, like, well, why even do it?
Yeah, you just don't do it. Not everything needs to be a movie. Not every video game needs to be a movie. And I think Metal Gear Solid is definitely one of those things that doesn't need to be.
I will say that my favorite part of that movie will be like that 10 weird offbeat 10 minutes in which you're just like chasing around a monkey and trying to like catch it in a net. And they're just like have these weird kind of cop heads on
that's,
them.
That's at the end credits scene. That's the end credits scene. Just 10 minutes of that.
I love Ape Escape.
Oh boy. Very weird. Peter Moore is leaving his role as chief competition officer at Electronic Arts to become CEO of Liverpool Football Club. The news first broke in a press release posted on Liverpool FC's website. Moore will take up his new role in June and will be reporting directly to the club's owners. The 61-year-old is currently chief competition officer at Electronic Arts, based in the United States, and will move to Liverpool to join the club in the summer, read the release. His nearly 10 years at EA have seen him in a number of leadership positions, including chief operating officer and the president of EA Sports. In an update on EA's website, CEO Andrew Wilson spoke of Moore's lifelong passion for the club. Passion is essential for all of us at Electronic Arts, wrote Wilson. It's what gets us up in the morning and drives us to do extraordinary things. And if you've ever met Peter Moore, you know that he quite literally wears his passion for Liverpool FC on his sleeve. So it's with great excitement that we congratulate Peter on following with his dream to become the next CEO of his beloved Liverpool Football Club. Moore joined EA in 2007 to head up the company's sports division. Prior to that, he had been president of Sega America and vice president of the interactive entertainment business at Microsoft. In 2011, he was appointed COO at EA before taking on the title of chief competition officer of EA's esports division. I believe deeply in following our passions and dreams in life. We'll continue to spend every moment doing something that you love. We've been fortunate to have Peter doing that with us here for almost a decade. We could not be happier to see him take the helm at Liverpool, and I personally could not be more honored to call Peter a dear friend for life. Moore has yet to make an official statement on his move from EA to Liverpool. You know, I guess, is Peter Moore, you know, a kind of a controversial figure? I mean, you know, EA, he was there during kind of one of, I think, the worst periods of EA's history, you know, when a lot of their games, a lot of their franchises, in my opinion, kind of went into the garbage to a certain extent. I don't know if he had like a lot to do with it. I mean, Dead Space, the Battlefield series, I mean, there's a number of titles that I can think off the top of my head, but consistently there was, you know, there was like a renewed focus on multiplayer. And
ooh, remember the online pass?
I mean,
they helped introduce that.
Yeah, a lot of that. I mean, that kind of stuff. You know,
brought back Medal of Honor.
They did, and it has been quiet since then. So I mean, I wish him success. He's going to be happy, but I don't know what kind of role he really had at EA that, you know, what were his decisions? Did they impact some of my favorite titles? Because, yeah, I mean, I see that, you know, he did the EA Sports stuff, which I could give a shit less about.
Madden's good, bro.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know if what kind of, you know, any type of influence he had on the direction that EA went at that time. And hopefully, I'm glad that EA clearly is not going that direction anymore. They're making some of the right moves. Still making mistakes, of course, like any big publisher does, but, you know, that they're learning. But I don't know. With this, I don't know how to feel about this. I mean, I wish him luck. I wish him happiness, but that's pretty much it for me.
My feelings about Peter Moore are really odd because, you know, for a company like EA that I don't really care for, I think because of all the things you listed, the kind of weird decisions they make, the kind of consumer hostile moves like that online pass. But I always liked Peter Moore. And I think it's because I most paid attention to the games industry early in the Xbox 360 era. And he was the guy who would lift up his sleeves. Yeah. You'd see that Halo 3 tattoo. You'd see that GTA 4 tattoo. And you get fucking hype by having a 360.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was much better at that kind of role.
Yeah.
Kind of being a facilitator in front of someone like Microsoft.
That was back then when Microsoft was making a lot of right decisions.
Maybe
he had something to do
with it. So, you know, and what was he there? Vice President of
Interactive Entertainment.
So, you know, it sounds like he had a bigger role, at least in terms of entertainment franchise within Xbox. At EA, he was like an operating officer. I don't really know. You know, you don't have boots on the ground type. Situations.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like at VP level, he was kind of more there.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, doesn't look like Sega of America really did too much.
No, I mean, there you go.
I don't know. I do wish him the best of luck. I think it's a really interesting move, and I still can't believe he's been there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
61 years old. That seems wrong.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was that old.
Yeah.
And this is just me wondering about what he'd done as their chief of esports. What big game does EA have in esports? And I don't hear much about Titanfall. Does Battlefield, like, I understand those are good. I understand those are good multiplayer games, but esports, I think, is a different thing from being good multiplayer games. And I don't feel like I hear much about Titanfall 2 or Battlefield. I mean, if a listener knows about that community more than I do, feel free to shout me out. But, like, I don't know. I hear more about CSGO still, or Hearthstone, Call of Duty naturally, but like Rocket League, stuff like that.
Overwatch, I guess.
Overwatch, is another one.
I'm just not connected with esports whatsoever. I just like, I've watched and stuff, I'm like, yeah, this isn't for me. But I would imagine that Battlefield would be it, because I love the Battlefield multiplayer. I thought it was really, really good, and I could definitely see, you know, professional players, you know, getting into that and kind of, you know, showing that off. So I don't know. Like I said, I wish him the best of luck. You know, and he's clearly doing something that he loves and he's passionate about. So good for him. Now the last story of the day, something which I'm actually really excited about. Microsoft has announced a new on-demand service, Xbox Game Pass. Xbox Game Pass offers timed access to a library of Xbox One and Xbox 360 games for $9.99 a month. Where it differs from Sony's streaming service, PSN or PS Now, is that users can download each of the games in their library directly to their Xbox One. That means continuous, full fidelity gameplay without having to worry about streaming, bandwidth, or connectivity issues, says Microsoft's Phil Spencer. The lineup consists of titles from 2K, 505 Games, Bandai Namco Entertainment, Capcom, Codemasters, Deep Silver, Focus Home Interactive, Sega, SNK Corporation, THQ Nordic, THQ Nordic GmbH, and Warner Bros. Specific games include Halo 5 Guardians, Payday 2, NBA 2K16, and Soul Calibur 2. Petra says there will be an access to over 100 Xbox One and 360 games at launch. Every month we'll see new game cycles in and out of the subscription. All games found in the Game Pass can be purchased at a discounted price. 20% comes off an Xbox One game, while 10% comes off all available DLC. This is, however, only available while the game is in the Game Pass catalog. In addition, all Xbox One games in the catalog and released add-ons will be available to purchase at an exclusive discount for Xbox Game Pass members, so you can make the games you love part of your permanent library to play whenever you want. Every month, new games will cycle into the subscription, with some cycling out, giving you a constantly updating library of games. Xbox Game Pass is your ticket to endless play. Xbox Game Pass goes into beta for select members of the Xbox Insiders programs. Alpha preview rings starting right now, actually. Xbox Live Gold members will also receive access to Xbox Game Pass ahead of its launching to non-Gold users, so I'll probably expect to see that. From the Game Pass fact regarding whether the users retain ownership once their subscription ends, no, the Xbox Game Pass catalog will update with new games being added every month. You need an active Xbox Game Pass subscription to play games. If you love a game currently in the catalog and want to own it, you can buy it and instantly save 20% off the price of the base game with your Xbox Game Pass membership. Plus, get 10% off any related game add-ons and consumables while the game is still in the Xbox Game Pass catalog. If your subscription expires or is canceled, any games downloaded through Xbox Game Pass will no longer be available. However, progress and achievements will remain attached to your account. All games that you have purchased from the Xbox One or Xbox 360 store will remain in your games library until you manually remove them. I think this is incredibly smart. It's what I think a lot of developers should do, which is go totally digital. And the fact that they're turning, basically this is Xbox Netflix, and I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, you were reading that off, and I'm trying to read ahead, just looking for the caveat. And I can't find one.
The only caveat is that we don't know. I mean, they say there's 100 games that are going to be at launch.
It's going to be weak at the beginning. I'm fine with that.
Like, I think we're going to get a few good titles.
You're going to get a few big name titles, sure.
Lot of stuff you may have missed, and it's like, oh, you can check that out.
But I think this is a very smart way to keep your Xbox in rotation. I don't play my Xbox very much. It's in the living room more as an entertainment hub. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think I turned it on for the first time to play a game 2 weeks ago for the first time in maybe 3 months.
Yeah.
And it was just to play a little Resident Evil.
Right.
But I'm just seeing this as a way. The one of the key elements here, and I really love this, is before launching it to non-Gold users. So that means it's going to be for non-Gold users.
Yeah, which is nice.
Old Microsoft would have made this Gold only.
Yeah.
And to know that, you know, because I pay for PlayStation Plus, and I don't really feel, I don't, like I said, I don't play my Xbox enough to really warrant Gold.
Yeah.
So to be like, okay, I'll look at the catalog ahead of time, the calendar, and really kind of think about what's there. And if I feel that for $10 a month that I want to play, I don't know, Dead Rising 4 or something, for $10 to have a month of fun with that game, I'm totally down to do that.
Yeah.
And I'd probably end up doing this as more as a piecemeal thing when I know I have more free time to kind of dig into these things. But that sounds amazing.
Yeah, like, totally does.
I think it's great.
Yeah, I'm a Gold subscriber and I enjoy it, and so I guess, you know, I'll be one of the first people to know. Then I could talk about it on We Are Error, hopefully soon. So that's
I was gonna say, if anything, this sounds sort of like pulling out the Xbox games with Gold or the PlayStation Plus free games,
yeah,
and just letting that be its own kind of service for a little bit.
Yeah,
and I think that's fucking brilliant. I can't believe they're actually doing this. It's so cool.
And it's them sticking it to the retailers, though.
Do you think
Nintendo, going after GameStop?
Do you think Nintendo Switch will do anything like this, Chris?
No. Obviously, as we know, it doesn't launch with a virtual console, It has Zelda, though. Zelda.
I'm just going to start making that a bit where each thing you bring up, like, but is Switch going to do it?
No. No, it won't. We'll be right back. fucking shit. It's a dinosaur. Jesus Christ. What the fuck? Oh my fucking God. Fucking dinosaurs. Holy shit. What the fuck?
You know, I really hope I can actually.
You probably can't.
Mix the audio with that.
You probably can't.
I don't know if that was on beat. I should have just been like metronoming over here.
It's probably not on beat whatsoever. But I think you don't need it because my voice was just so enjoyable to listen to during that entire little intro segment that you don't even need the music. John Williams at this point.
No one else can see it, but you just like the vibrato in your voice and you just like outstretched your arms. You're like, I'm going for this.
This is my moment.
Mm-hmm. No one else can see it but John, but it's still my moment.
I'm really interested to hear what it sounds like afterwards. I'm going to listen to it. You know, just see like, oh, yeah, this is great. It'll be my ringtone from now on.
Well, I mean, I can't edit it out. I mean, natural transition
it's
into it.
It's there forever. And it's appropriate because, as we said in the beginning of the episode,
We're talking dinosaurs,
as Mr. DNA said in Jurassic Park.
The movie I did not see.
How have you not seen, of all the Steven Spielberg films, I know you're not a big fan of Steven Spielberg like now, neither am I, but back in the 90s, like 93, oh my God, it was just like, oh, the new Spielberg film's coming out? We gotta go see it.
The funniest, well, 93, I was, what month in 93?
Well, I understand that, but that was, you know, now, it's like still culturally relevant today. That movie still holds up today. Which is incredible.
No, yeah, like I know I've seen certain scenes. Like I know the beginning about him being really mean to that kid.
Fuck that kid. Whatever the hell that kid. I don't know if it's a boy or a girl or what. Whatever.
The end where the T-Rex and the little banners fall in. Like I've seen all that. Like iconic. I know all those scenes.
Hold on to your butt, John.
I don't think I've seen all the movie back to back.
I have
seen Jurassic Park 3 though.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And Jurassic World.
Jurassic Park 3, it's a B movie. It's like Jurassic Park is like, you think of it as a B movie, but it's more than that. Where Jurassic Park 3 absolutely is a B movie.
It's just a B action movie. The pterodactyls are terrifying.
Yeah, it's the best part in the entire film. Actually, that was supposed to be in the first film. It's in the book, actually, where they go to like a pterodactyl kind of exhibit, and they have to get through it because all the pterodactyls are attacking them and things, which is pretty cool. And the riverboat scene in Jurassic Park 3 is also in the Jurassic Park novel as well. That was supposed to be in the film, but they scrapped it because it was too difficult because the dinosaurs, they learned this when they were making the film because all the animatronics and like the skin they had over the animatronic robots, they would take on so much water that they would bloat. And when they would try to move them, they would like jiggle around and it looks so unrealistic. So it's like, yeah.
You know, I know those are just robots, but that's very terrifying to think about. Like as an actor, I couldn't. Actually, that might make me be more in the moment. Just seeing an animatronic fake skinned dinosaur moving. Like,
hey, this thing could fall on me or like actually like bite my hand off while I stick it in there. It's like it could happen. So.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs.
But we're going to talk about just like dinosaurs in video games,
going to be very loose
because really there's not that many, I would say, good games that have dinosaurs in them. You know, I'm just going to say like dinosaurs the entire episode. But I mean, just like off the top of my head, like the ones that I remember playing and that I really enjoyed was kind of the first two Dino Crisis games. Of course, that came from Capcom, and it's pretty much Resident Evil with dinosaurs in the place of zombies.
Yeah, I believe that's when we talked Resident Evil. I think Birdie had actually made a comment about, I mean, what do you guys think about Dino Crisis? It's basically Resident Evil with dinosaurs.
It is.
Unfortunately, I've never actually played it. I think I've just seen the cover of the first one.
Great cover, which just has that foot on the ground, like a little like blood trail or whatever going off to the side. I mean, very iconic cover. I mean, the basic plot of the game, as I can remember, is that it follows this team of like commandos that go to this secret island location. It's like, oh, get it? It's a dinosaur island, just like Jurassic Park. And they go there to investigate like what the hell is happening, and they eventually kind of figure it out that it's not like, oh, like they create these dinosaurs like they did in Jurassic Park, where it's like, oh yeah, we mix reptile DNA with frog DNA, that's nothing bad gonna happen. Apparently they did like time travel stuff and they brought the giant dinosaurs of the future at one point. It's like, okay. But What I liked about the game is that it was kind of a survival horror title. Really, Capcom actually has a great word for it when they're marketing the game. They call it panic horror because the dinosaurs actually move a lot faster than zombies. And so the whole idea is that of the game is that you're just trying to escape them constantly and trying to like kind of lay traps for them so they don't come after you because, you know, a lot of the enemies that you fight are like velociraptors and things like that, and they can kill you very fast because they are obviously fast, and they can open doors, as we know in Jurassic Park. So that was just kind of the first two games that really stuck out in my mind. I never played the third game, which apparently came out on the Xbox, I believe, like the original Xbox, like in 2003. Mm-hmm. I heard it wasn't very good. But I really enjoyed my time with the first two Dino Crisis games, as goofy as they obviously were. But it's like it's a series that I think you could definitely reboot. You know, and definitely kind of market it in a really kind of fun way where maybe you're not going in the same direction as Resident Evil, or maybe it can be a little more irreverent to a certain extent, but still kind of have those scary moments where I got to avoid all these, you know, dinosaurs and things like that. And I think you can definitely have it where it's kind of a first person game again, kind of kind of go in the direction that they took Resident Evil 7, where it's, again, it's more of a, you know, a goofy kind of fun romp, but then you still have those terrifying elements with the dinosaurs.
It's funny. I was wondering, because, like, the cover you mentioned is not the cover I remember at all. It's the one with the woman and the red-haired woman.
Oh. And the, like, yeah, that's, oh, God, what's her name?
Dinosaur claw behind it. That's the one I've always seen. I do see the one you're seeing, but that's, like, the European version, I believe.
Pal. Maybe I own the European version.
What? Hell.
Yeah, that was always the one I associate with.
Pulling
in
some imports here, Chris?
I think maybe. I mean, that's just the because I have that cover of the I have that game what the
box
hell? Box. Thank you. that word, that common word everyone forgets. Yeah, I mean that's the one that he has with the foot. Maybe it's a flip thing. Maybe it has a flip cover.
Oh yeah, there
like
were
that.
Some PS1 games I remember had kind of like a cover on them.
Yeah,
like a sleeve. I also do remember this Dino Crisis.
Regina, that's Regina. You know, she's the main character you play as in Dino Crisis.
Okay, throughout
not its sequel. Well, she's in. I don't know if she's in the third one, but she's in the second one.
Okay,
yeah, she's the only character from the first game that appears in the second game.
Okay, I have also seen this Dino Crisis 2 cover. That's a terrifying dinosaur in the background. It's like a big T-Rex, just like rah.
Okay,
this is not play
it
on.
That's the one. Yeah, it's the shadow cover, right? Where it has the red text. And with,
these are very good covers.
Yeah, they are. I love the European cover for the first game. It's very simple. You know exactly what you're getting into.
And apparently, Dino Crisis 1 was also on Dreamcast.
Yeah, it was ported to Dreamcast.
How late
and,
a difference is that?
Microsoft Windows in 2000. Yep,
that's a big wait, isn't it?
And
like 3 years?
It is, yeah. It comes, I mean, but that's when, you know, that was the last gasp of Sega at that point. They're like, you know,
you're just like scrounging. Yeah. Give me games.
Pretty much.
You had Power Stone Dream.
Yeah, of course.
Needed.
Yeah. Oh, that's definitely. But yeah, and right now it's actually on the PlayStation Network, and you can download and play it. And huh. I think of all the original kind of PS1 games that you should play, Dino Crisis is definitely one.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's still, I mean, look, the camera, it's very much that fixed camera. It's stiff, it's clunky as hell, especially now, I imagine. But it's one of those classic games I think everyone should play. It's at this one point in history to show like what the PlayStation could do at that point. And I think Dino Crisis kind of exemplifies that, you know, in terms of survival horror, kind of third-person gameplay games.
It is kind of funny that there aren't enough games where the concept is this, but with dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Because that seems kind of easy. And I think dinosaurs are, in fact, like, dinosaurs are smarter than zombies per se, but like,
sure,
you don't really have to play them as such. And I think that concept really does sound interesting, where it's Resident Evil, but with dinosaurs. Mm. And if anything, that's worse since they're faster.
I mean, that's the whole thing where it's like, because the main enemy, of course, would be velociraptors. You know, yeah. I mean, and
they're obviously the best dinosaur.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? Here's the thing. Could you imagine playing Resident Evil 7? But it's velociraptors running after you the entire time.
Wouldn't make it past the first.
Pretty much. You have to book it. You know, they have to make your run ability a lot faster in that game. But I could totally see them rebooting it. You know, taking what they learned with Resident Evil 7 and but applying that nice dinosaur kind of cover to it. So I think that'd be really cool.
A recent game that I've actually had a little bit of hands-on experience, but just through osmosis, I've gotten a lot more experience with it. Is Ark Survival Evolved,
mm-hmm.
which apparently is just like, I think it came out in December. Like I said, my friends have really dove into this a lot, and I'd be remiss if I did not mention it because I know some of them listen. But the shenanigans that you can get into that game, it's basically like Minecraft. Again, or it's dinosaurs. Minecraft with dinosaurs. you can like trap and hunt with them, and it's just kind of making this prehistoric world, and it's, I don't know, it's just like a, it's dumb fun.
Yeah.
And while it builds on creation, I will say it's sort of still not in beta. I think it's official release, but there is some buggy elements to it.
Still. Oh, it totally is a very buggy game. You've had some time with it too. I have, yeah. And it was originally an early beta in 2015, I think, for Xbox One and PC. It was an early access game. They don't want to call it beta anymore for these type of games because they go on forever. It reminded me of 7 Days to Die. It has the totally just where a lot of item management. It doesn't really all look that great, you know. I mean, so some of those textures, it's like, oh boy, huh? That's something. But and then you can design your character. You can be like an abomination or like a regular looking human. The general idea is that you just play this. Character, you create this character, you're stranded on this island, which is filled with not only dinosaurs, but like all these other prehistoric players. It's a multiplayer game, MMO, not MMO, but like kind of like in the same vein as like 7 Days to Die or Rust or stuff like that. And the idea is that you're just on this island and you can like tame or kill like dinosaurs or other prehistoric creatures. Like there's giant insects, there's like giant sharks and sea creatures, like mastodons and mammoths and like giant sloths. It's like, oh, this is, they're throwing everything together. But, and it has like the sci-fi element to it, you know, too. And it's just like, but you really don't give a shit about that. You're just like, I need to build my hut and I need to defend myself from other players. And so I have to, you know, upgrade myself constantly, get stronger. I need to tame my, T-Rex or whatever, because you can ride almost anything in this game, which I think is pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, it's fine for what it is, but not something that I personally like. I'm going to keep playing
it. I do love that it also like kind of builds on that where I think Rust, you can do this too, but you can like move on into bigger elements, eventually get sort of guns and better weapons and fortresses. And I think my friends are telling me about this, that the newest, like one of the expansions, starts to get more mythical with it.
Oh, interesting.
And so like, that's a whole nother element the game is adding. And it's just like really fun to see that the game is just like, fuck it. This is going to be fun, ain't it?
Yeah. No, absolutely. There's even points where you can build like a giant community of people, like fortresses.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really cool. The idea that you all work together.
My friends, we have a group chat and I'm like one of the only ones who isn't playing it every day like that.
Yeah.
But they have their own little tribe and they're like, rival tribes will come in and just wreck their shit. And it's just like, that's what you're doing. I think that's the biggest problem with games like this is since it's, I think when you're away from the game, your character is still kind of asleep.
Which is weird. I don't like that.
It's still there.
It's very Dark
Souls. I think it's like that in Rust too.
Yeah.
So like, I hate the fact that like, I would just be anxious and be like, someone's stealing my shit right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I understand why that's there. But in the early stages of gameplay where you don't really have a way to defend yourself, I think it makes it very hard to cross a certain barrier.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Totally agree. Probably another dinosaur series that I played like way back in the day was Turok. I think a lot of people kind of if anyone thinks of dinosaurs in video games, they always think of Turok. And of course the first one was for the Nintendo 64, Turok 64. And I remember I had like really fond memories of the game, and then I recently saw some footage of it and I go, wow, this does not look good at all. I mean that game fog is very thick. That kryptonite fog
needed for a reason, huh?
Yeah, and I mean, despite it, the game being ancient at this point and clearly not holding up, it had a huge impact at the time. It was a very popular title, certainly at when Nintendo wasn't exactly producing many games for the N64. The N64 launched in '96, I want to say, or '97. So yeah, I mean that's probably why the game was so popular at the time. But of course the series continued on, and the next game that I remember in the series playing a lot of was Turok Evolved, which was for the original Xbox. And I, I remember, again, I remember enjoying that game, but, and even like it's offline multiplayer. You know, I played that with all my friends too when we were playing Halo or whatever, or Rainbow Six 3. But I enjoyed it for that. Like, the one thing that always kind of sticks out in my mind is the kind of weird dinosaur human hybrid creatures, obviously borrowing. That's where Jurassic World originally got its ideas from. But I remember like using like exploding arrows to blow up dinosaurs, like not only in multiplayer, but also the single player campaign, or poisoning dinosaurs with poison arrows. It's like very weird stuff. And then the last Turok game I remember playing, I think everyone kind of remembers this.
Grungy, hardcore.
Yeah. First person. It very much, you know, when every game tried to ape Gears of War, no matter what type of game it was. But yeah, it was Turok 2008. And the only thing I remember from that game is being chased by the T-Rex, like, because I guess you're chased by a T-Rex in every dinosaur video game, but in the opening segment, but also that one of your companion characters is voiced by Ron Perlman. And that's about it. I remember you go to the planet, you play a guy named Turok, you go to the planet, you got to get this guy named Kane, I believe was his name, because he was doing some bad stuff, and then you fight him.
He did some bad stuff?
He did some bad stuff, I believe, and he's on the dinosaur planet for some reason. That's a weird thing. It's actually a sci-fi game. That's all I can recall from that. But I did not like it. I do remember, infamously, that it had an achievement for the multiplayer achievement where you had to kill another player to get it. Your own teammate, I should say. It was just like,
why?
For an achievement. That's back in the day. We're like, oh, it's funny. It's like,
you did it, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Really?
No, I didn't.
Mr. Achievement Whore himself.
I didn't. Right? No, I never. I barely. Because I quit the game. No, I quit the game. And because I just looked down like, what the hell happens? And it's like, oh, okay. Because it was that bad. It's not a good game whatsoever. And clearly because it killed the franchise.
I might have actually beaten it. It was one of those rental, like, it's a short game, if I recall.
I think it's 5 hours.
And it was one of those games in 2008 when there were still Hollywood Videos and Blockbuster. Well, I don't even think there were Blockbusters.
I think I rented it from Blockbuster.
Really? Okay. Yeah. It was one of those games that you, like, I'm definitely not going to buy this shit. But
no.
Like a dollar a day? Okay.
Yeah.
I got it. I think I beat it in like a day or two when I had that much free time. I don't remember a damn thing. You're right. I do kind of like have a vague memory of the way the environments looked.
It's very gray, very green.
And bland. It's the blandest shit you've ever played.
Yeah.
Fun fact, this was a Touchstone Games production. Like, you know, Touchstone. Like Touchstone Pictures?
Yeah.
Like Moon with the Star?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't last long, huh?
Touchstone Games is merely like a label imprint of Disney Interactive. It's not really its own entity.
That's right. Disney did this game. Holy shit. Wow.
But it's just kind of crazy. I think that's the only time I've seen the Touchstone symbol on a video game.
So it's weird.
2008's Turok.
That's so weird. Why would they do that?
Maybe because it was a Disney game. And Disney did not want to possibly, because the game's
that's what they always use Touchstone for. Whenever Disney doesn't want to associate themselves with a specific project, they always put the Touchstone label on it. And like, that's not us, even though it technically is. And that happened recently for that weird George Lucas fairy film. Where he plays
fairy
like
fairy film,
yeah. It's about these fairies. Like, there's this evil, ugly wood fairy. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Like in the last 2 years,
I'm gonna look it up. And like George Lucas plays like the king fairy.
Wait, hold on. George Lucas has a role in this game.
He doesn't have a role, but they designed the character off of him. It's by Touchstone. God, what was it?
Well, why are you trying to figure that out? I'll just finish up and say,
yeah, please continue.
Turok, not very good. Not very good at all.
No.
Another game I really wanted to talk about, and I know you're not a huge fan of fighting games, but I just got to give a quick shout out to Primal Rage.
I don't think I've ever played
Primal Rage. It's the dinosaur fighting game, pretty popular in the mid-90s.
I may have seen it, but I don't think I've ever played it. Gosh, maybe an arcade? Maybe I played an arcade. Is it an arcade game?
Yeah, it's an arcade
game. I think I might have played
it. It also came out on like SNES, PlayStation, Atari Jaguar CD.
Ooh, Jaguar.
Sega Saturn and Sega 32X. Apparently there was a Game Boy version I knew nothing about. But the arcade version came out in 1994. Mm-hmm. I believe 2 years after Mortal Kombat, if I'm recalling. Did you get it?
Strange Magic. Not a great title.
Good job, Lucas. You really worked hard on it.
Released in 2015. Made $13.6 million.
I bet it was made for more than that.
Let's check out what the budget was. Yeah, it's an evil wood nymph fairy They're called the Bog, I think. And then there's the Sugar Plum Fairies.
Uh-huh, yeah. There's the Tooth Fairy in this movie as well.
Is the Tooth Fairy in this film?
Chris, I have not seen
this movie. Okay, I was just saying. You sounded serious when you said that. Yeah. Okay, let's see what the budget was on this gem. They do not list the budget.
They don't want you to know how much money they fucking lost.
Yeah, no, they do not. And yet, Touchstone Pictures.
So I'm glad we could
confirm that.
Confirm that that thing happened
during the dinosaur podcast.
God. But yeah, Primal Rage, it encapsulates that sort of that mid 90s time when I think there are a lot of excess fighting games. People really trying to get the heat off of Mortal Kombat. Because even if you play Primal Rage, it's very much kind of aping that ultra-violent vibe. It's, for God's sakes, it's dinosaurs fighting against each other. And I think there's a monkey, too, as well. Oh, okay. Gorilla.
It's more, a little different.
It's not just dinosaurs, but that's who I associate with. It's more like just prehistoric animals, creatures.
Survival.
Like Ark. The game takes place in a post-apocalyptic version of Earth called Ark.
Urk.
Like E-U-R-T-H.
Urk.
Players control one of seven large beasts that battle each other to determine the fate of the planet. Because apparently a Velociraptor, if he wins this fighting tournament, is going to figure out what to do with the world.
Yeah.
If I recall, it's either in the
No more doors.
It's either in the first or the, no more doors. It's either in the first or the second game. It might actually be both. But there's like a heart as your meter, like, the life meter is a heart, okay. And when you die, the heart explodes.
All right.
Just to go with that extra sort of... Yeah, this is a bloody game. This game's for mature players,
yeah,
y'all.
Obviously.
But yeah, it's just... Again, it's just one of those dumb little games I remember running across when I was younger, playing them in the arcades. Because when your parents are 21 years old and you're like three, you can kind of get away with whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that is true.
So... Young parents, really fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really have much to say about Primal Rage. I just know it was fucking fun, and I really wish they brought one back that just kind of had... In the same vein as, like, they bring Mortal Kombat back or Killer Instinct. Like, I don't know. It would just be fun to have,
you
I
can,
think.
Yeah,
or,
you can...
Or just reskin Mortal Kombat, basically. It's kind of the
I mean,
thing.
It pretty much is. You know, I mean, if you want to do it that way, then, yeah, have it be, like, a $20 game or $15 game.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, look at this, and it looks nice. And I could see that. Now the only other game that I want to bring up is Primal Prey, which was a first person shooter dinosaur hunting game by Sunstorm Interactive, which I do not think they're around anymore. But the whole idea is basically it's Cabela's, you know, like those Cabela's hunting games, but you hunt dinosaurs. And I got this game, I think, in 2001, I want to say, and it's awful. Everything about it's bad. It's not very intuitive. The guns are really bad. The fog in the game is ridiculous because they can't render anything in that piece of shit. But the thing I remember most about it is how it scared the shit out of me. Because the AI in the game was so aggressive that you just can't hunt like carnivores because they would constantly hunt you. And so if you shoot your gun once in the game, every carnivore in the game would come after you, like the T-Rex, the Velociraptors, the Allosauruses, everything. And it's just like, oh! And you hear them, and they always come up from behind you or to the side, which I guess is kind of smart because the shooting was so terrible that there's no way you ever hit them. Like, the only thing I could kill was, like, the two, like, dumbest dinosaurs in the game was that duckbill dinosaur from, like, Neverending – what the hell was it? From Ducky? Littlefoot. Yeah, that one from the Littlefoot series.
Oh, and the Land Before Time?
Land Before Time.
Is there
a
Land Before Time video game?
There must be a Land Before Time video game. But and the other one, which was the Stegosaurus. I always shot them. But everything else, I mean, just yeah, but it just sticks out my mind because it scared me as a kid and I had to stop playing it because I was to get so nervous anytime I would hunt the carnivorous dinosaurs.
Wait, what the heck is an Allosaurus?
Allosaurus is like a smaller version of a T-Rex.
I was about to say.
I remember they came from the Jurassic period, and instead of like two little kind of fingers at the end, they had three. That's the only thing that I always remembered to keep them different. And they're smaller than
they
than
look
the
like
T-Rex.
Just a Velociraptor, but thicker.
They're bigger.
Like
I think they're like 12 feet tall.
Okay, so they're just like a middle thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
A middle thing.
What was Primal Prey an arcade game? Like a
no, it's PC. Game? PC. I should PC exclusive game.
Okay.
For Windows.
Was it first person or third person?
First person. There's a Cabela's. The Cabela's.
Okay, and the dinosaurs come up behind you and from the side.
The carnivores, like they do.
That sounds. Hold on.
So you have to constantly turn around because the game was so bad.
So what's the concept? How is this happening? Is it guns or bows and arrows?
It's both. You can do guns, bows and arrows, crossbows.
So was the game just like fuck logic?
Or? Yeah, at this point. Yeah, you're it's like a loose plot where you're kind of transported to an alien world that's been populated with dinosaurs for hunting expeditions and things. And so you go there as a master hunter because, you know, he's hunted all his life.
He's hunted all these deer.
Yep. Yep. And then, yeah, he goes there and then you hunt specific targets that are kind of, that's what your missions are. Like, you hunt the Stegosaurus this round and then you can either capture it or kill it. And you can get points on that, and then you can unlock other abilities or weapons, and all the weapons are bad, so it doesn't matter what the hell you were using. The crossbow was the most useless weapon ever, because it would take forever to load, and you can never hit anything with it.
See how a crossbow would take down a T-Rex.
That's the thing. It's even you hit like any other dinosaurs with the crossbow, it would take like 5 hits. It's just like, and when a Velociraptor is coming after you, it's instant death. Like, you don't really have a health bar in a game. You get hit once, you're dead.
This game sounds awful.
It's an awful game, but it's always, forever, it has always been in my head because it scared the shit out of me. It made me like, you know, have really, a PTSD.
How old were you?
I was very young. It was 2000, 2001, so I was 8, 9, I believe. Yeah, yeah. Around there. But it was an M-rated game, though. I mean, it was a game I should not have been playing.
Chris.
Yeah.
Do you have the excuse that I do that your parents were really young?
No, I had old parents.
Okay.
Yeah, my parents had me when they were in like their mid to late 30s. Their mid 30s, I believe.
Responsible adults, not
really. I mean, the
first frivolous teens.
Yeah, well, yeah. They listened to the show because I can't say anything negatively about them. But they were responsible, even though the television was my third parent.
Oh, no, my dad listens to the show too. I love you, Dad.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, he loves to brag to my mom because I've given my dad more shout outs than my mom.
Oh, okay.
My dad's like, yeah, he mentioned yeah. His dad again.
I will give a shout out to my father, Brent Herman, and my mother, Martha Herman. Hope you guys are listening. Makes me feel good inside.
I do want to give a call out to, yeah. I know we weren't really going to talk about it, but I'm sure people are going to be wondering, why no Jurassic Park games? Why are we not mentioning any Jurassic Park games? What did you say, Chris?
Because they all run together
for
me.
They really do.
It's all the same game, or even if it's different, like even though they're strategy games or RTSs or first-person shooters or like the insane amount of adventure games, like I can't think of which one it was because they're all just the same shit.
I do remember – the thing is I can't even remember if it was a Lost World game that I was playing at my cousin's. I just have a distinct memory of playing – I think I'm Genesis, Jurassic Park game. You could be both a human and I think a dinosaur.
Yeah, I do remember that one. Yeah, where you play as Dr. Grant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Sam Neill. And then, yeah.
So that's got to be the first one, right? Or is he's also in Lost World, isn't he?
No, he's not in Lost World.
Then it's got to be
Jeff Goldblum.
It's got to be just like Jurassic Park the game.
It's like Jurassic Park the game, the 1.5 sequel, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I remember that. You play as Dr. Grant and you play like a little dinosaur that grows up to be something more powerful, I believe. I think that's how it's structured.
Because you know,
it was a side scroller.
That's how evolution works. You're just like a small little dinosaur, and then all of a sudden you have a lesser effort.
You just put the frog DNA in them, you can be anything you want at that point. That's all you need to do, as we obviously learned. Spare no expense.
Is there a dinosaur creation game out there? I bet
Spore. Spore is kind of that. Well, I'm just saying you can create. I'm sure there is a dinosaur creation game, but when I played Spore, I created like a frog dinosaur creature.
Really.
A lot of dick monsters. I encountered a lot of those banana monsters who were basically
which are
dicks
just
and
dick
bananas.
Monsters. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
cucumber monsters. Pickle monster. Yeah. It's all dick monsters.
Yeah, they should have realized that.
You did also mention something that I completely forgot existed. The Jurassic Park Telltale game.
Yeah, I think forgot about
you forgot it.
Yeah.
I think Telltale kind of wants to forget about that one.
Yeah, they do.
I doubt it worked.
The I remember, well, because I've seen parts of Let's Plays for the game, and it acts as a side story to what's happening. Or is it a side story? Shit, I don't remember. No, because... No, it is a side story. It is a side story where you follow this person who goes... like the main character like as a mercenary or whatever, and you go to retrieve the dinosaur DNA that Newman is getting.
I do remember this, yes.
And the first episode is about you investigating his death when he's on the island.
So he's dead. He was not fucked.
You see his body. He was not fucked. He did not give birth to any Velociraptor
actually,
babies.
Actually, you know, he could have been fucked and then died.
That could happen. You know, we don't know.
That should be the second season.
Frog DNA, man. We don't know what's happening when you put that in there. But yeah, I remember that. And yeah, you play. She was a Hispanic woman. I remember that she had a very thick accent. I just have to remember.
We all do.
I'm not saying I just, but in this case, she had one. I'm just saying that I recall that. And then you play, I think, as another character who was like an employee at the park as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think two characters. And you like something that you do with your wife and your kid or whatever. And you gotta, like, you're divorced. Very Steven Spielberg-esque, where it's always a divorced, like, family member. You have to have that there. But
where else would he get conflict from?
That's true. Well, not the dinosaurs, obviously. But yeah, that's all I can recall from the Jurassic Park. I am curious to actually go back. I want to eventually play that, you know, just to say, get all my achievements, of course.
You've got to kind of see where Telltale has come and gone.
I think. Yeah.
Especially because you're a huge Telltale fan. Have you played everything?
I mean, yeah, I played their Sam and Max stuff.
The more recent Telltale, when they like post Walking Dead.
Yes.
Did you play Minecraft?
I played the first episode of Minecraft and went, this is not for me. It's not funny. It's not funny at all.
Is it? It's probably meant for like younger kids, I would assume.
I guess so. The characters suck. Particularly this one character that's voiced by Brian Posehn, who's a stand-up comedian I just do not like.
He's got an interesting voice.
He plays the biggest asshole. And again, I'm like, nope, not going to do it.
Seems like Brian Posehn. I just feel like he's like quietly an asshole.
Yeah, but Pat Oswalt, I mean, I'm sure he's great in it, but yeah, not for me.
Oh, I also wanted to mention the Lost World arcade game. I used to play that all the time at Peter Piper's. I could never really get that far in it. Peter Piper's? Where the food's as good as the fun?
Is this a local Texas place?
Is it?
I don't know. We didn't have Peter Piper's in Buffalo, New York.
Peter Piper Pizza?
No.
Yeah, it's a place where the food is as good as the fun. Mm-hmm. And
They really ingrained that slogan in your head, didn't they?
Fuck, I think so. Yeah. Fucking pitch man over here. My roommate, best friend, would always joke. He was like, yeah, they're both shit.
Yeah.
It smells like feet. It smells like feet over there, man.
They always do. All arcades do. People have these fond memories. Like, arcades are actually terrible places. Well, they were hotbeds for germs.
The old 80s arcades were really good, but like the 90s 2000s arcades, are when they were like, oh shit, these kids don't want to play games here anymore. Well, let's put like a play place in it, and you have to take off your shoes.
Yeah,
there's smelly ass kids out there.
A lot of smelly kids. But the thing is, not to get sidetracked in the arcade stuff.
Dude, we're fucking sidetracked.
But I've gone to Chuck E. Cheese once in my life. Like, I'm proud to say that I've only gone there once.
Dude, you don't fuck with Charles?
And no. Charles
Entertainment Cheese. The East End.
His new name is always going by now.
That's what I call him.
I used to be Chucky, but no, I'm grown up now.
That's what I call him all the time. Charles Entertainment.
Yes, but I went there to a birthday party to a kid I didn't like, and
I hope he's not listening now. No, follows up with Chris Herrmann.
He's not. And I went there and I became deathly sick the next day. Like, really bad. Because they do not wash anything in that place. And it's a hotbed of just disease and just screaming children and employees who could give less of a shit about you.
Is that what turned you into just, like, sarcastic? Fuck.
I was already there by that point. My little, 12-year-old Chris being sarcastic and 12 aloof.
12 and still having a birthday at Chuck E. Cheese? Is that too old?
I might have been too old. I might have been younger. I'm just guessing. I was probably between the age of 8 and 12 at that point. Like second grade, third grade, definitely around there. Definitely elementary school.
Okay.
So maybe like 11.
Still
maybe
acceptable.
Oldest 11.
It's still acceptable
to yourself. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry you had that horrible experience.
It was terrible. I was like sick for 3 days. It was really, really bad. And the pizza there is awful. It's not even pizza.
It's cardboard.
Is Chuck E. Cheese still open?
Yes. There's a Chuck E. Cheese like right up the road from here.
Are there commercials for it on TV? Not that we would know, but are there? Like, I never see any advertising for
it anymore. Yeah, I think so. And actually, Charles, he looks different now. He's like,
he does?
He's like, on the outside of the stores, he is the same sort of logo, but he's like animated.
You don't want to pay for that.
He's like animated, kind of looks like Jerry from Tom and Jerry.
I gotta see what he looks like now.
Okay, while you're looking up that, quick shout outs to a couple other games.
Oh my god, yeah, he looks totally different. Yeah, he's like, he does look like. Oh, that's horrifying. I remember that. See, that's the one with the evil looking Five Nights at Freddy's, you know, mascot. That's what I remember.
That's where they got the idea from. But apparently, this episode is going completely off the rails.
Yeah.
So let me just give quick shout outs to a couple extra things that I remember. Crash Bandicoot Warped, it had a Dynomite level, and I just remember running away from a T-Rex. And you know,
as you do.
Or no, not a T-Rex, Triceratops. It was unique.
Oh,
and there's like little pterodactyls. You might have actually ridden on top of a dinosaur in that game. I don't know. Warped was my favorite Crash Bandicoot game, although I'm getting more and more afraid to return to them because you keep just pointing out how bad they are. And after playing Uncharted 4, just that little segment, I was like, this is not great. It's hard. And it's hard because bad design.
Oh, that camera is one of the worst cameras ever. So bad. Sorry. It's like, I'm going to run towards the camera because that's so much fun. The thing is, they even kept that in the Uncharted games, if you remember. Like, that has always been a consistent thing in all Uncharted. And it's always the worst segments.
But it works better in Uncharted because you're not really running. Like, nothing's in front of you that you can't see. It's always you're running from a truck or a rock. And, like, you just have to keep pushing forward. Yeah. Where in Crash Bandicoot, all the obstacles are also in front of you.
Yeah.
And you can't really see them. But yeah, I still love it, and I'll just kind of ignore it, that it could be bad.
No,
apparently, and this is just me, like, kind of researching stuff, I know nothing about it, but there's a video game called Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. It was developed by Capcom, came out in April 1993. It's a side-scrolling beat-em-up, because, of course, all games are at some point, based on the comic book series Xenozoic Tales.
Sounds about right.
The game was produced as a tie-in to the short-lived Cadillacs and Dinosaurs animated series, which was aired during the same year the game was released.
Oh my god!
I don't know that at all. I know we've talked about doing some commentaries for video game specific things, and if at some point we run out of ideas, we could do some commentaries for the complete series of Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
Sounds
I really
good.
Gotta know what's going on here.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite dinosaurs of all time is gone. G-O-N, he comes from a little Japanese manga. I know nothing about the manga. I'm not going to pretend like I know some Gon history. I do know he had a game released in 1994, Japan only, for Super Famicom. But the only reason I know him is because he was in Tekken 3. I think that's the reason maybe many Americans might know who Gon is, unless you read the manga. He was the last hidden character in Tekken 3. And so... my experience with Tekken 3, for the PlayStation 1, I never had a memory card.
That would be bad.
And so, Crash Bandicoot, I would always have to start over. Tekken and Mortal Kombat usually were the ones I played because there's no real need to have a save game. Although, I will tell you, and this is something that bugs me to this day, I had the Emperor's New Groove game for PlayStation 1, and I've never beaten it, but I remember there's a point I was at my grandmother's house. I was in the last, area and zone, and me and my brother, my brother's watching me, and I'm, riding the last level, and my mom gets home, she's like, gets there, and she's like, we gotta leave, turn your dumb game off. Mom, I'm at the end.
Yeah.
She's like, so? Let's go. And I had to turn it off, and to this day, I think at that point, I was just like, I'm just never gonna.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on PSN, and you don't know how many times I, go to the screen and just look at it and go, one day.
David Spade would be very happy if you buy that game.
I like the Emperor's New Groove movie.
No, I do too.
The movie's really good.
It is an underrated, because it came out, after the Disney Renaissance. Yeah. But
it's 2002?
It's a good...
2001?
2003, I want to say.
Oh.
I mean, that movie started out being something completely different, super dark. It was actually called Emperor of the Sun, or Empire of the Sun, and it dealt with this, the woman, who's the evil?
Yzma,
basically wanted to destroy the sun so it doesn't damage her skin anymore. And she wants to kill everybody and things and kill the emperor. And Pacha was supposed to be a really young kid. Very weird and stuff, but not to get you off track. But I just know the even what it inevitably being up became, it was great. Great movie.
Yeah. But anyway, so every time I wanted to play Tekken and I wanted to play Gon, I would have to beat it with every single character. I've beaten it probably 20 times.
Jesus, just to get gone.
Just to get gone, it. And you know what he can do? He can fart on you.
No.
And just to watch this big, mindful Heihachi right after beating this green demon who then turns into a giant, mythical beast with a snake for a hand, getting farted on by a little dinosaur that is shin high.
So he's like really small. Like
no, he's really fucking small. Oh, okay. Like Yoda in Soul Calibur 4 or whatever.
Wow, okay, got it.
Like
got
smaller it. Than that. And just in the little setup, there's just a little fart sound. It's adorable.
And does it damage you?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes, he's great. And to play him in the beach volleyball part of Tekken. No. Tekken 3 is one of the greatest fighting games of all time. I don't care what anyone says. And also, I really hope Gon is the last secret character, because if someone tells me there's actually one after him, I'm going to be so pissed off. Mm. But also, he would play this little video, because it all... Why I liked playing Tekken 3 is each character had their own like cinematic ending. And so it was always fun to rewatch those. And Gon's was great, because it was this endless loop of him like riding on a bear and a whale and an eagle. And it was just, I don't know, it was just a lot of fun. And I still to this day don't really know who Gon is, but he is one of my favorite fighting game characters of all time. So that's kind of where I go on dinosaurs.
Now there's one thing that I forgot to mention. It's actually a game that I'm playing right now. And I think you'll be playing soon, is Horizon Zero Dawn. There's robot dinosaurs in that game.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, wow. I mean, I'll save it for the review, but this game is very, very impressive. And those segments where you're fighting a lot of these dinosaurs, particularly like the robot T-Rexes and stuff, it's like, okay, like you can totally do an open world dinosaur game instead of having them be robots like regular dinosaurs, and it can work really, really well.
Huh. Yeah. I'm going to pretend like I totally knew that I remember that there were dinosaurs in Horizon Zero Dawn.
Robot dinosaurs.
And just say that this is why this episode exists.
Yeah.
This is why we chose dinosaurs. When really, it was just because Birdie mentioned it at some point.
Yeah, yes he did. Thank you, Birdie. Appreciate it. Did you mention Yoshi?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, okay, he's going to do Gon. I'm like, okay, yeah. No, but then you got
to
do Yoshi.
I wanted to save Yoshi till the very end.
Oh, excuse me.
Because I'm not going to talk about him in this episode.
No, because you want to do a Yoshi episode.
I
want to
do a Yoshi episode.
This is going to be me sitting here silently, which maybe some people would want that, but it's
okay, like... first off, Yoshi's been in some of the greatest games of all time.
I know that.
Super Mario World, Yoshi's Island.
He's introduced Super Mario World, right?
Yeah, he was introduced in Super Mario World.
He's great in that.
Yoshi's Island, it's just like a middle finger to Rare in the Donkey Kong. Just like going...
It's a middle finger to the people that played it.
Yoshi's Island?
Yeah, the game that's 3 hours long?
That's Yoshi's story.
My mistake.
Yoshi's Island is basically Super Mario World 2.
Okay.
With Baby Mario.
I never played Yoshi's Island. I played Yoshi's Story.
Also, I was telling you off mic, Yoshi's Story is apparently like much deeper than you think it is.
I do not believe you.
I'll explain it to you come Yoshi's episode, which at any point could probably be coming, because once I get to play through Yoshi's Woolly World, that's when we'll decide to do it.
That's actually a game I do want to play. Not because it stars Yoshi, because it just looks... I like the yarn game, and Poochie. But it has such a unique look to it. It's like, you know what? I might check this out.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those games. Was it Wii U? It was Wii U.
Wii U and 3DS, I believe.
Well, yeah, Yoshi and Poochie's Woolly World is the one that's on the 3DS. The original was on Wii U, which is why I probably never played it. But yeah, so we'll save all the Yoshi talk for Yoshi's own episode, and I swear we're also going to have a Yoshi music episode at some point.
That'll just be me sitting here silently.
Yoshi's Island music is so good.
Maybe that can be a you and Trace episode.
A Tetris Attack, Penelopon. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Anyway, do the whole round of plugs. I always forget everything that we're supposed to do.
Well, if you want to follow oneofus.net, of course, or excuse me, We Are Error, you can find us at oneofus.net. You can also follow us on Twitter at We Are Error Cast. You can follow me at Chris J. Herman.
John. And I'm _ John Romo.
Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of other stuff on oneofus.net you can listen to. We have Digital Noise, our Blu-ray podcast, Highly Suspect Reviews, which is all of our movie reviews. We also have Somebody Likes It, our music podcast. We have Thumbtacks and Screwjobs, our wrestling podcast. We have Five and Out, our variety show. Now I'm trying to think of what else is on oneofus.net. Oh, Inside the Locker, our sports podcast.
Deliberations of Doom. Mm-hmm.
Our horror podcast. Deliberations of Doom is our subscriber horror podcast, but our regular horror podcast is Screamcast.
Yeah.
And also there's some other subscriber content as well. Our video reviews are now under our subscriber banners. You want to check those out for all our movie reviews. You have the option to do that. We're also doing a lot more movie commentaries, which you can check out. I think the most recent ones are for Batman v Superman, Dawn of Shit, and Suicide Shit. So you can both check those out.
Oscar award-winning Suicide Shit. Yeah. Hey, me and you were also on one for Resident Evil.
Resident Evil, so and then, yeah.
Hopefully we'll get to go through that entire gamut. because I've only seen the first one. So these will all be brand new experiences for me.
It only gets better. it really does. It really does. Holy fuck, shit, it's a dinosaur. Jesus Christ, what the fuck? Oh my fucking God, fucking dinosaurs. Holy shit, what the fuck?
Hold on to your butts.